For those of you who were at Fox in Berkeley last month, and in particular attended the Big Cups talk, Christos is also my role model. That's why I'm dressed in black. And in fact, I took one step beyond Cup. I made the background slides of my talk black as well. For those of you who didn't make it to Fox, this is what you missed. Very good parties. And anyway, speaking of Berkeley, if you've actually been in Berkeley for the last year, you probably didn't run into me. Because I've been everywhere else apart from Berkeley. I was in Beijing, in New York, and now in Los Angeles. And this work was done, started in Beijing, and went on my way to New York, and I finished this in New York. So, I should talk about zero knowledge. So I'm going to talk about zero knowledge. So I'm going to start with the following question that motivated this work. What are the minimal assumptions we know for the existence of constant round zero knowledge protocols for MP? Here I mean, good completeness and negligible soundness. And surprisingly, the state of the art is constant round statistically hiding commitment schemes. This is due to Prasad, Krapiu, Yong, and Gora and Kahan. And assuming constant round statistically hiding commitment schemes, we have a constant round statistical zero knowledge argument and constant round combination zero knowledge proof with perfect completeness and negligible soundness. I just want to point out that it's not surprising that for statistical zero knowledge, we need statistically hiding commitments. I think it's somewhat surprising that for computation zero knowledge proofs, we need statistically hiding commitments. And that's, we don't really need, but that's the state of the art. That's because the only way we know how to get negligible soundness for proofs is having the prover committer. The verifier commit to everything in advance, and he needs statistically hiding commitments again around the prover. Also, just to address the first question, some kind of one-way functions are also necessary for zero knowledge for MP. So the next natural question is, what are the minimal assumptions for constant round statistically hiding commitment schemes? We know that we can construct them from clone-free permutations, this is again Gora and Kahan, and collision-resistant hash functions, this is Damgard, Patterson, and Fitzman. And again, we know in this case that one-way functions are necessary. And in fact, there's some indication that one-way functions may be sufficient. I think Danny Hartley will be talking more about this. This is assuming certain, making some assumption on comprehensibility of MP instances, but they don't really know whether the assumption is it's plausible, but we do not really know whether it's true or false. And also, there's a black box separation between one-way functions and two-round statistically hiding commitment schemes. This is due to Fishlin building over of Simons. So the Harnik and Nauer result is actually non-black box. So, well, the next natural question is, what are the minimal assumptions for any kind of statistically hiding commitments? The state of the art is a linear number of rounds in the security parameter, or the n round statistically hiding commitment schemes from one-way permutations due to Nauer, Ostrovsky's, Venkateson, and Yong. And this was recently improved to approximable one-way functions by Heitner et al. And I just want to note here that we actually know, even though this question is motivated by statistical zero knowledge arguments, we actually now know how to construct statistical zero knowledge arguments for MP from one-way functions without going through statistically hiding commitments. This is due to Nguyen, Ong, and Badan from the recent box. And just one thing to note here is that for all of these results, the bottleneck is a tool called interactive hashing introduced by Ostrovsky, Venkateson, and Yong. And this is going to be the focus of our talk, interactive hashing. So, okay. Does that as just a constant round interactive hashing protocol? And that's the question we want to answer. Yes, but not the kind that will allow us to build statistically hiding commitments from all implementation. So really the answer is no. And here I'm going to show you how to, we're going to present a result that says that interactive hashing requires basically a linear number of rounds. So at this point, I will define interactive hashing. It's a two-party protocol, and we have a sender on the left and the receiver on the right. The sender has an input, a string Y, and bit string Y. The receiver has no input. And at the end of the protocol, both parties should decide on two strings, Y0 and Y1. And the sort of the completeness functionality requirement is that the string Y that the sender has should be one of the two strings. there's also some kind of security requirements. I'm going to just state them informally. There's a hiding requirement which says that the receiver should not be able to tell which of the two strings is equal to Y. It should be some kind of statistically hiding requirement. And there's some kind of a binding commitment. I'm just going to state it informally for now as well. It says that the sender can only control at most one of these two outputs, Y0 and Y1. And the other one that he doesn't control will essentially be uniform. Let me just outline what the protocol looks like, just something in mind. Basically, the protocol is very simple. Each round, the receiver sends a hash function from n bits to 1 bit, and then the sender replies with the hash applied to its input Y. And they just do this for basically n minus 1 rounds. And here, the hash function has been chosen from a pairwise independent family. So once we have interactive hashing protocol, we can actually build a commitment scheme. This is due to now at all. Let me just outline what the commitment scheme will look like given an interactive hashing protocol. Again, it's just semantics. I'm not really talking about security requirements yet. So the sender has a secret bit B that he wants to commit to, and the recipient again has no input. So the sender will run an interactive hashing protocol. We'll pick a random X, run an interactive hashing protocol with pi of X as his input. And at the end of the protocol, again, they get two strings. One of them is going to equal to Y. This is the secret value D that's only known to the sender. And the sender then sends B XOR D. And to decommit, he will review the randomness that he used to compute Y. And and then the receiver can check, apply pi of X and check which of the string corresponds to Y0 or Y1, and then recover the bits. So here's a theorem due to Nao et al., affectionately referred to as the result, as a Nobi result. They show that one-way permutations imply perfectly hiding commitment schemes with a linear number of rounds. Turns out for this proof, hiding is to show that the commitment scheme is hiding. So they use the interactive hashing protocol from the previous slide. And to show that the protocol is the commitment scheme is hiding is actually very easy. What's tricky here is to show that the protocol is binding. To show that the protocol is binding, they show that there's an Oracle Turing machine M, which is used in the proof of security, that takes any permutation and any cheating sender that breaks the commitment scheme, inverts the one-way permutation on the non-negligible fraction of inputs. So if the sender breaks the commitment scheme with non-negligible probability, then we have a reduction that inverts the one-way permutation with non-negligible probability. And so if the permutation is one-way, that means that the commitment scheme is binding. Okay. And note that the reduction is allowed to run in time that depends on epsilon, which is okay, which is the success probability of the cheating sender. And this is essentially what we refer to as a fully black box proof of security, because the reduction uses black box access to both the cheating sender and the permutation. Talks to aggressive. Okay. All right, so the natural question that arises is, can we improve on the round complexity of this interactive hashing protocol, this being the bottleneck for all the previous results? It's really simple. At every point, at every round, the receiver just sends a hash function, and the sender just replies with the hash of the hash function, hash of the this input. So can we improve on the round complexity by maybe sending more bits per round instead of sending one bit per round? Can we do better by using n-wise independence instead of pairwise independence? Can we do better with a private coin protocol? So the previous protocol is public coin because the receiver just samples the hash function and sends it. Can we do better by having the sender use additional randomness, randomness in addition to, so the previous protocol is deterministic one that's given a string Y. Maybe by having the sender use some additional randomness, we can do better and use fewer rounds. The answer is yes. If we do pairwise independent hashing with order log n bits output instead of 1-bit output, we can get an n over log n round protocol. This is due to Koshiba, Seri, and Hitner and Reingold. And as I mentioned earlier, this is essentially optimal. So our main result is that, yeah, that this is essentially optimal. Any fully black box commitment schemes based on one-way permutations and iterative hashing requires n over log n rounds. Again, fully black box here means what I said earlier, that's reduction, that give access to a cheating prover, and the permutation breaks the permutation. Okay. In fact, our result scales with the hardness. If you're willing to make stronger assumption on the one-way permutation, say it is exponentially one-way, then assuming that one-way permutation is hard against circuit of size S, then our lower bound is n over log S, lower bound the number of rounds. And this is also optimal because the previous construction, the n over log n protocol, scales with the hardness. And this result also partially addresses open problems posed in Novi, work by Ding et al., carry the Koshiba and Sari result, Heitner, Reichel, and similarly work by Damgard, Goldwright, and Wilson. So once you see the proof, you'll realize that the n over log n lower bound is actually fairly simple. But I think as recently as the work of Heitner and Reichel, there was this open problem about whether we can improve the round complexity of the iterative hashing protocol. So even though in hindsight everything is fairly natural, we didn't really still exactly call it. So before I go on to the proof, let me just say a little bit more about indirective hashing. So actually in the literature, there has been two notions of indirective hashing that has been used. There's the notion of computational indirective hashing formalized by Newman, Ong, and Badan, and in some sense implicit in the Novi work. This is the one that allows us to construct fully black box statistically hiding commitments from one-way permutations. And the NOV result also showed that any computational indirective hiding, indirective hashing scheme is also an information theoretic indirective hashing scheme. Let me just say the computational information theoretic refers to the binding property. So here we're referring to some kind of computationally binding property, and here we're talking about some kind of statistically binding property. And for the latter, we actually have a four-round protocol due to Ding et al. So let me just say how both of these have been used in previous work. For computational interactive hashing, it's been used for statistically hiding commitments and SDK arguments, as I alluded to earlier. It's also been used to transform, to do a compiler for honest verifier zero knowledge arguments to zero knowledge arguments without any computational assumptions. This was done by Ostrowski et al. And then we further work by Damgard. The information theoretic iterative hashing has been used for oblivious transfer in the bounded storage model, oblivious transfer in noisy channels, for transforming honest verifier zero knowledge to zero knowledge. This is for proofs. For arguments, we need the computational version. For proofs, it seems that the information theoretic version is some kind of sufficient. It's still been used to construct zero knowledge with efficient provers. This is worked by so again, let me return to the previous picture that we had earlier, and let me just say a bit more about what our work also shows. So what we also show is that any fully black box statistically hiding commitments from one-way permutation implies information theoretic hashing. So in a way, this implication is slightly stronger than the previous implication shown by Newman et al. It's fairly subtle, not terribly big. What's really interesting is that since we're able to show omega n over log n lower bound for this result, it also implies that n over log n lower bound for computational indirective hashing, and in particular, it separates information theoretic indirective hashing from computational indirective hashing. This was previously not known. Okay, so let me now sketch the proof.
So this four round is what you refer to by yes, but no?
Yeah. Okay, now I'm ready to talk about the proof. Okay, I have plenty of time. Okay, so let us recall what the statistically hiding commitment scheme from indirective hashing looks like. We have an indirect hashing protocol, and then you come up with two strings, the sender sends B XOR D, and then and so on and so forth. Okay, Okay, so here we consider interactive hashing protocol wherein the sender can have additional randomness, which we call sigma. Okay, so yes, input and string y and additional randomness. So what will our strategy be? Our strategy will be the following. We pick a strongly one-way permutation pi. I'll tell you what strongly one-way means here. After that, we will construct a cheating sender, f star, that breaks the commitment with probability 1. And then we will show that if this if the number of rounds is very small, smaller than n over log n, then we have the following scenario. For any efficient proof of security reduction, for any efficient machine M that's used in the proof of security that runs with time t, if the number of rounds is very small, and this proof of security is able to take the cheating sender and break the one-way permutation, which is what is guaranteed by the fully black box requirement, then we contradict the strong one-wayness of the permutation. So since we have a contradiction, it contradicts the fact that the number of rounds is small, so it must be the case that there must be many rounds.
I'm a little confused. Your result is about interactive hashing or about commitment?
It's sort of about both. It's about commitment schemes. So it's about commitment schemes that are built from one-way permutations via interactive hashing. And since any computational interactive hashing protocol implies this, if we show a lower bound for this, we have a lower bound for this and for this.
So your result does rule out short number of rounds?
Provided the commitment scheme is based on interactive hashing.
Okay, so it doesn't rule out in general?
It doesn't.
In a black box?
Yeah. Okay, so, but in one way it was a very, until this result, was a very promising approach towards constructing statistically hiding commitments from one-way permutations with very few rounds. This was suggested as the open problem in the, for instance, in the work of Ding et al. They constructed the four-round protocol. And it's also, in some sense, the only technique we know right now. So I'll discuss a bit more about how to interpret the result.
So, when you say, I mean, this is the beginning, but when you say information, theoretic information, you know, this, you mean like the reduction is computational, exponential time?
It's the binding property, so I don't really want to go into it. It's the definition of security, what it means to be.
But the permission theoretic is bigger from computational, is what
you're saying. Because
it's the binding property. It's a little bit hard to imagine, because you think that statistically binding implies computationally binding, but it's not exactly the case. Let's just say that if you have this, any interactive hashing protocol that satisfies computationally binding must satisfy this other property. And the exact definition is not exactly important for this topic, but we can talk about it later. Okay, so this is our strategy. We construct a cheating sender for which there's no proof of reduction if it runs in very few rounds, that can use the cheating sender to invert the permutation on the noticeable fraction of inputs, thereby contradicting the existence of a fully black box construction of blah from blah with very few rounds. Okay?
Well, can you just explain what it means to be black box and interactive hashing protocol?
What does it mean to be black box based on interactive hashing protocol? It's basically the NOVI construction. So we run an interactive hashing protocol, we get two strings, one we associate with a 0, one we associate with a 1. The one that matches the input of the commit of the sender, we call it Y sub D, and then you send B X of D.
Okay, so it's any protocol that satisfies.
Yeah, that looks like this. Run interactive hashing, get two strings, use it to determine how to commit to it.
It's a fixed protocol
or not? No. This interactive hashing protocol can be anything now.
And it doesn't have to be public coin?
It doesn't have to be public coin, yeah. It doesn't have to be public coin. The sender can, you can use arbitrary hash function, NY's independence, anything you like. Any number of output bits, anything you want. So it's just a semantic.
You have access to each round function, right?
We fix the protocol and then we show that in that sense. Yeah.
What about the constant H?
Which constant? Oh, this is arbitrary. I didn't want to add just a constant C, blah blah blah.
Okay.
Also, one other thing is we also do not allow the protocol itself to query the permutation pi. in the execution of the interactive hashing protocol, you shouldn't be allowed to query the communication path.
Allowed or not?
This is satisfied, for instance, by the Novi protocol. You never query the permutation again. Okay. I mean, there's some extension to deal with that, but I don't really want to talk about that for this talk. Okay. So the semantics are understood. So we don't make any security assumption of the take any interaction hashing protocol that satisfies the property that at the end of it you get two strings. That's it.
So it's not allowed to query one permutation, so.
Sorry?
It's not allowed to query one permutation, so can it rely on assumptions or not? Can it rely on any other assumptions? Because it's not allowed to query one permutation.
It's not allowed to query the permutation again, but again, if you think about the Novi protocol, it's just interactive hashing protocol, it doesn't really need to query anything. Just a semantically, it's just a...
So it's information theoretic.
But can I rely on trapped permutations?
You shouldn't be running a trapped permutation in the course of the protocol.
I should not. So it's
you could in a way, but it doesn't help you infer the permutation pi. Actually, let's just probably should take this offline. We'll go through the proof first, and then maybe we can come back to this.
Okay.
So a candidate protocol would be send hash, like the Novi protocol, just send a hash function and reply with hash. Okay, let me explain the intuition of the lower bound. Well, at the end of the protocol, there's supposed to be, you decide on two strings, right? So, at the end of the protocol, it must be the case that the sender has reviewed n minus one bits of information about the input y to be able to cut down the two strings. And the claim is that at every round, you can reveal at most order log n bits of information about the string y. And if every round can only reveal at most order log n bits of information, this immediately gives you an n over log n lower bound. Now suppose there's a round in which the sender sends more than log n bits of information about the string y. Okay. Then basically what this means is that we can then construct such a cheating sender. At every round, he will sample a random y prime, so as input y prime, to the interactive hashing protocol that is consistent with the partial transcript. Okay, so with the partial, there's a partial transcript, you get a query, the s prime gets a query from the receiver. He samples a random y prime that's consistent with the partial transcript, and then respond as though his input is y prime, and send back the next message. So if there's a round in which there are omega log n bits of information that we view about y, this essentially means that there are n to the omega 1 super polynomial number of y primes that are consistent with the partial transcript. This means that if we have a proof of security m that's trying to invert some the one-way permutation or some challenge pi of x, the probability that y prime will match pi of x is negligible because there are super polynomial number of y primes. If you sample one at random, there's only a negligible probability that you will match the pi of x. Okay? So now, the claim is that if in the reduction samples a transcript that is not consistent with the challenge, then even seeing the decommitment information is not going to help the proof of security. Okay, and that's basically how the whole proof goes. Alright, so now I'm going to formalize this thing into a proof. No, this is not a proof yet, because there are a few things that need to be addressed. How do we quantify bits, and how do we handle randomized commitments? Okay. Randomized interactive hashing protocol wherein the sender has additional randomness. Okay. So first, a technical lemma. This sort of tells us what kind of one-way permutations we need. So it was implicit in the work of Gennaro and Trevisan that a random permutation is strongly one-way in the following sense. It's exponentially one-way. So for any Oracle circuits of size, say 2 to the n over 5, given Oracle access to pi, for all circuits, all exponential size circuit given Oracle access to pi cannot invert pi on more than a exponentially small fraction of inputs. This holds even if we give the Oracle circuit access to a pi inverse Oracle that answers all pi inverse queries as long as she's not allowed to query the pi inverse oracle on pi of x in a way it's like CCA2 secure. And this holds also even if we give C access to a p-space oracle. Actually, this holds if C runs in an unbounded amount of time as long as it makes at most 2 to the n over 5 queries, oracle queries. Okay, now this will be the permutation we use for our proof, and then I'm going to tell you what the cheating standard is. Before that, I need to introduce a bit of your notation. Think of the interactive hashing protocols having two RRs. The verifier goes first, sends string alpha 1, the sender replies with beta 1, and then alpha 2, beta 2, and so on, right up to alpha r and beta r. We define a notion of consistency, a partial transcript up to the beta j message from the sender is said to be w sigma consistent if it is the case that if the sender's input is w, the embed string is w, and the randomness is sigma, then it will generate this particular transcript. Okay, very natural definition of consistency. And given a random string for the interactive hashing protocol and a partial transcript, we use con, which means consistent, to denote all possible w's that are consistent with this randomness and this partial transcript. Okay. So this is the set of all possible inputs to the prover, such that if his randomness is sigma, upon getting alpha 1, it will generate alpha 2, and upon getting beta 1, and alpha 2, and so on. So now we can specify the cheating sender. For the cheating sender, we will build the cheating sender as follows. We pick a random string for the interactive hashing protocol, pick a random sigma, and fix a sigma once and for all. Okay? We never change the sigma again. That's the trick. That's how we handle randomized interactive hashing. And then the intuition is basically what I said earlier. So for the while we first doing some standard tricks, we may assume that in the proof of security, each time you query the ith message for the protocol, you also query the entire partial transcript. And you only query alpha I. You always query a partial transcript alpha 1 rather than alpha I, and if you query, and you must have queried or made all the previous queries. Okay. It's just standard truth, just semantics. Again, like I said, we construct the cheating sender by, at every round, whenever it gets a query alpha I, which is the message from the receiver in the ith round, he picks a input that is consistent with the partial transcript. Remember, con is the set of all inputs that are consistent with this partial transcript and this randomness. And then he responds as though his input is wi. Okay? And he does this for every round. All right? And then at the end of the interactive hashing protocol, the sender just sends 0. And to decommit to both a 0 and a 1, he needs to be able to send pi inverse on both y0 and y1. Where y0 and y1 are output of the interactive hashing protocol. So this is what our cheating sender does. Okay, if he gets a transcript for which all of the answers are consistent with his previous answers, then he sends pi inverse of y0 and pi inverse of y1. This is our cheating sender. Okay, now I'm going to show that if there are very few rounds, then there's no reduction that takes this cheating sender and inverts the one-way combination, thereby giving our So the idea is we will simulate S star, the cheating sender, with the pi inverse oracle. All right. So recall that our assumption is that this protocol is a fully blackwell construction of commitment schemes from all implementations. So it must be the case that for this particular cheating sender, which succeeds with probability 1, our proof of security must, given black box access to the cheating sender, invert the permutation on a noticeable fraction of inputs, say 1 over n to the 8. Okay. So now, suppose we are able to simulate S star with this pi inverse oracle. Then we just plug this pi inverse oracle, we replace S star with pi inverse, and this essentially contradicts the our assumption about the permutation being strongly one-way. And that gives us our contradiction. Okay. So now we need to show how to simulate S star with the pi inverse oracle. Okay. Fix any transcript. We can simulate S star without access to the pi inverse oracle except at the decommitment stage. So we are really only concerned with sort of the transcript of the whole thing. Okay. So fix any transcript for the interactive hashing protocol. if the interactive fashion protocol is consistent with, it's not consistent with the sentence input being pi of x, where pi of x is the challenge that the M is trying to invert, then if it's not consistent by definition, neither y0 nor y1 is equal to pi of x, in which case, to break the commitment, we are just sending pi inverse on two strings that are not pi of x. And clearly, we can do this using the pi inverse oracle. So the concern is handling transcripts that are pi of x sigma consistent. Okay. Suppose we fix a particular transcript that's pi of x sigma consistent, then we let pi be essentially the conditional probability that given the condition on the first I minus one rounds being first I minus one parts of the transcript being pi of x sigma consistent, what's the probability that the sender will reply with something that's pi of x sigma consistent? Okay. Note that by definition, we have a pi of x sigma consistent transcript. So in particular, we want to compute the probability that the sender responds with beta I. Okay. Okay. So the first thing to note is that if we multiply p1, p2, right out of p of r, note that at the very start of the protocol, before anything happens, all possible 2 to the n bit strings are pi of x sigma consistent if your transcript is nothing, because any possible n bit string is the possible input to the protocol. And at the end of the protocol, we're supposed to determine two strings, which means that at the end of the protocol, the number of strings that are consistent with this particular transcript, there are only two of them. Okay, so if you multiply all these numbers together, it's a probability that for random input, the final transcript is pi of x sigma consistent, so it's 2 over 2 to the n. Okay, this in particular means that just to go back to the previous intuition, the easy way to interpret this expression is the log of 1 over pi is essentially the number of bits of information you review about the n-bit string at every round. Okay, so we know that the product is 2 to the 1 over 2 to the n minus 1, which means that the smallest, the mean of all these values is less than or equals to 2 to the minus n divided by r. Okay? In particular, if r is very small, then the mean is going to be very small. Okay? Because if r is 1, this is really tiny, if r is n, this is really big, so if r is small, roughly n over log n, then we know that the mean is smaller than, say, 1 half, 1 over, in the denominator, 2t times n to the 8. Okay? So essentially, this means that if you have any transcript that's pi of x consistent, the probability that you see is at most the mean of this, because that's the probability that...
What is t?
T is the running time of the reduction. So, if there's one of these probability that's very small, this means that condition upon a partial transcript, the probability that the cheating sender replies to something that's pi of x sigma consistent is really tiny. Okay. Now you are allowed to, the reduction is allowed to make at most t queries. So by taking a union bound, we can show that the probability that M sees a pi of x sigma consistent transcript is at most 1 over 2 times n to the 8. Okay. So, and then we know that, and if this happens, then we give up, okay? If this doesn't happen, then we can simulate S star with a pi inverse oracle, okay? So this means that, so the assumption is that since this is a fully black box proof, we know that M inverse pi of X with probability 1 over n to the 8. Now, subtract away this expression, we know that it still inverts, we still have an efficient reduction that inverse pi of X with a pi inverse oracle with probability 1 over 2 times n to the 8, which is a contradiction. This is actually the entire proof. Any questions?
So I think maybe I missed it at the beginning, but I thought you have a much more general possibility result, that you said there is no black box construction of statistically hiding commitments from one permutation.
No, actually no, we only rule out those that are based on interactive hashing.
I see.
So like I said, it wasn't clear a priori in previous work that I mean, right. Iterative hashing was believed to be a very promising way.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. That slide is an error, so you didn't say.
Yeah, so in the box later, I completely omitted buying the ready hashing, but it's not okay. Okay.
Phrase this in the way that Danny said earlier in terms of the simulatable incorrect hashing, so don't care at all about. Can you give a definition of simulatability?
Yes, yes. So there is a notion, there's a definition of simulatability of, I actually didn't hear someone mentioning simulatability. Essentially, if you have a notion of simulatability of iterative hashing, then you essentially, this is essentially the NOV definition. What I call, this is basically this one. This is definitely the definition that you're talking about.
Because then you don't need the implementations at all, right?
Right, right. So, but actually what happened is that this result is a lower bound for this is slightly stronger than a lower bound for this. The reason is that in that definition of simulatability, in the proof of security, it's defined in terms of weakness relations, which roughly corresponds to, for one-way permutation, it corresponds to. The relation that we want to use is basically the witness relation is whether given x and y, whether y equals a pi of x. So in that definition, the simulatability requirement, the reduction, is not allowed to query the witness relation. Whereas for our proof, we're allowed to query the witness relation. So in some sense, our lower bound is stronger than this lower bound. But it's a very subtle technical reason.
So the witness relation is again querying this.
Basically, yeah. But I mean, when you want to extend to one-way functions and other things, then it's more complicated what the witness relation is.
Is it actually clear that whatever you do with one-way permutations should only become harder when you work with something that is not a permutation?
It's not so clear. So here, again, this result from this result to this result, they use witness relations that may not correspond to permutations. Whereas when we go from here to here, we use witness relations that correspond to permutations. So in this sense, our result is stronger in this direction, it's stronger than this. I think when you don't use permutation, you also have to worry about the hiding properties, so that kind of complicated things.
Can you see this as proving two things? The first thing that simulation requires a certain number of rounds, and then if you want to do this based on a permutation, then you need to satisfy simulation, because that's what you do in the proof, right? You need to set it up to...
You can think of it as that, yeah. Yeah, you can think of it as that. Although it wasn't the proof either written as such. Implicit in the proof should be a statement that says that, yeah, that the simulation requirements. Although, let me just point out that, so like I said, this is, in some sense this implies this, so this is stronger. So in the NOV result, they were interested in positive results. So having a protocol that satisfies a stronger requirement is a good thing. We're trying to prove negative results. So proving for a requirement that is weaker is a good thing for us. Makes our results stronger. That makes the results, that one makes that result stronger, and this one makes our result stronger. Okay.
Where do you use the fact that you can query pi throughout the protocol? That's for
okay.
Consistency checking?
No, so when we say that Esther randomly samples a consistent transcript, how do you sample a consistent? You use a p-space oracle. So you need the fact that the computation is done by a normal Turing machine.
Okay.
There's some way in which you can believe you can get around this issue. You can allow the protocol to query the combinations. But I think I'm a proof, I haven't written it up yet, so don't quote me on it. Let me just say that, not that this technique is actually simple and somewhat powerful. In fact, we can also prove lower bounds for interactive hashing with multiple outputs. So instead of decommitting to both 0 and 1 by just applying pi inverse to both of this, you just suppose at the end of the protocol you have restricted everything not to strings but a subset of strings, then you just pick two of them at random and send pi inverse of those two strings. If the statistically hiding protocol is probability a half, they correspond to decommit to different values. And you know, if the subset is and then if the subset is very big, then the probability that you sample something that is the same as pi of x is very small. If the subset is very small, then basically you need to have then n minus all the log n of information, in which case you still get the lower term. Okay. I wanted to say something about black box lower bound. Okay. This lower bound fully exploits the fact that the proof of security for the construction, I guess I'm not finishing early after all, is fully black box. What does it mean to be fully black box? This means that the construction uses black box access to the permutation, and in the proof of security, the reduction uses black box access to the adversary. Okay? Previous work for lower bounds on efficiency of black box constructions apply also, as far as I know, most of them apply to weakly black box constructions, a series of books. And so this is the first to really exploit the fully black box reduction. So in some sense, it's doing something extra, and it seems pertinent to this proof. And you know, it seems like something that we need to think more about. And what's also really important is that, except for zero knowledge, for which is hard to define what it means to be fully black box, if we restrict ourselves to black box reductions between different cryptographic primitives, we do not know any proof of security that uses non-black box use of the adversary's code. Okay, we have constructions that use non-black box use of the underlying primitive, for instance, the word cryptography and C0. But even in that case, the proof of security uses black box access to the adversary. We really, really don't have any non-black box use of adversary in proving cryptographic reduction. So in some sense, you know, proving fully black box reduction in some sense says as much as proving weakly black box reductions. Okay? And we should think about proving fully black box.
Can you just repeat the last sentence? What is your conclusion?
So in some sense, fully black box lower bounds are as indicative of the state of the world as weakly black box lower bounds. Just because really we do not know how to cross the barrier between fully black box and weakly black box. And in this case, really thinking about fully black box is the thing that buys us something extra. And basically, fully black box corresponds to some kind of simulatability requirement.
So, again, you're saying in this result, you're exploiting the fact that it's fully black box, unlike these works that will apply only to weakly.
Yeah, I mean, all these works, you can also get analogous statements for weakly black box, which is a good thing in a way. This makes that result stronger. But it seems that in certain scenarios, we may not get the right answer by just looking
at it. But is it all about the zero-knowledge experience or black box existence, right?
Yeah, that's why I sort of say cryptographic reduction between primitives, yeah. In fact, the technique here is basically very similar to the Goldratt-Crouch at lower bound for zero-knowledge, yeah. I agree. But for reduction between primitives.
But there might be a weakly black box version of your result.
I'll be somewhat surprised. The reason is that we have a four-round information theoretic iterative hashing protocol. So usually, I don't have a formal statement, but I'll be quite surprised, because there is a four-round information theoretic iterative hashing. So for instance, in this work Travisan and myself, we prove lower bounds on hardness amplification by showing that hardness amplification must imply combinatorial heaters, and then using lower bounds for combinatorial heaters. Okay, so combinatorial heaters is in some sense an information theoretic object. So any proof that goes via a relation to some information theoretic object, usually somehow along that reduction you lose the fully black box. Also, we should think of, I just want to say, how should we interpret this result? We should think of the result as telling us where not to look for, to try to construct one-way permutations, to construct commitments from one-way permutations. And it's sort of like helping us understand the state of the world. So it's good to understand what's possible and also what's not possible. Okay. This result is also interesting in that it's one of those rare lower bounds that shows that it's this intriguing thing that you can trade off interaction and assumptions. If you are willing to make stronger assumptions like clause-free permutations, then you can get statistically hiding commitments from cloud-free permutations in 2 rounds. And somehow, if you do more interaction, you can base it on a weaker primitives, which is somewhat surprising and extremely fascinating. Such a trade-off has also previously sort of, in some sense, been studied in the work of Rudich on separating secret key agreement and trapdoor functions. There's a method between like 3-pass protocol and 2-pass protocols. Here we really have like a big gap between primitives. Okay, so I wanted to slowly go back to my earlier slides. Let me first mention some other results in this work. We also show lower bounds for 2-round information theoretic interactive hashing. We show a lower bound on the kind of parameters you can achieve for your binding property. It's a very simple proof, just probabilistic method. And the lower bounds we get is qualitatively similar to these parameters achieved by this the naive 2-round protocol from the work by Dick. I think the word naive was the adjective used in that paper, so I'm not making a judgment. Okay, so going back to where we started, I want to talk about zero knowledge because this is the workshop on zero knowledge. In this work, it will probably be in the appendix. Possibly in the appendix, you will find a construction of a formal statistical argument of knowledge for statistical zero knowledge, argument of knowledge for MP assuming 2 rounds statistically hiding commitments. Okay? Surprisingly, this, as far as I know, has been published. I have looked up Foundations of Cryptography, Volume 1. I have talked to the author of Foundations of Cryptography, Volume 1. And I've talked to one of the students. And as far as we know, there's been no formal statement of this result. Even though it's actually fairly simple, it would be what it would call a footlong modification of a previous forum protocol due to a Valare Jacobs manual. Footlong for the same reason. Basically, you replace. There, they constructed a 4-round computational argument of knowledge from MP. You just replace the computational witness indistinguishability sub-protocol, the statistically witness indistinguishability sub-protocol. But anyway, since it hasn't been explicitly stated, I plan to include this in the appendix. And what's really nice about this protocol is that it's really, really simple. It's simpler than Feigl-Shamir, which I think if you really try, you would still get 5 rounds and not 4 rounds, unless you make some algebraic assumptions. And then the Feigl-Shamir analysis is actually not easy. You need to be really careful. This one is fairly straightforward. And using this as a sub-protocol, you can, in some sense, simplify the presentation of this local zero-knowledge, precise zero-knowledge protocol of Mikali and Pass. So, like I said, I'm going back my slides in reverse order. So we start from one of our first slides. This was the places in which this work is done, and since I'm at the end of my talk, I wanted to acknowledge the following people/entities.